many of you are experiencing right now the shalom of God, and you have also a sensitivity and an awareness of the holiness of God. And when you become aware of God's holiness, there's a freedom that's available to you, because you can begin to put off things in your life that aren't holy. You can begin to put off the things that are displeasing to you, that are displeasing to the Lord, the things that hinder you, the things that trouble you, that bring trouble to your soul. And you can recognize them even when you're trying to worship. They rise up against you. Take a moment right now. Set your heart in the direction of the Lord and say, Lord, I want to use your power, God, for freedom. I want to experience liberty. I don't want to be in bondage to anything. I don't want to be held by addictions. I don't want to be controlled by bad habits. I don't want to be someone who is more easily manipulated to do evil than good. I want to give you my whole heart. I want to dedicate every part of my body to your honor. I want to commit my mind to you. I want to serve you, Lord. You shall love the Lord, your God, with all of your heart, with all of your soul, and with all of your strength. I think the song, Holy Unto You, is for the time when we're taking Seudat HaMashiach, the cup of the meal of Messiah. You know, when you experience the closeness of God and the presence of God, things can change in you that cannot change when you're far away from God. The story of the Jewish people is, as they came close to God, they became different. And when they were far from God, they were different. When they were close to God, they were different in a good way. And when we were far from God, we were different in a bad way. We had certain kinds of problems when we were far away from the Lord, and we had certain kinds of joys when we were close. I want to cavil for a bit, to rejoice in the wonderful weekend we had last weekend. Because I want to do that to give honor to the Lord. The Camp Arah play last Friday night was first rate. It was really wonderful. So congratulations. Thank you to Brian Rose and his team. All of you who worked in the camp, all the young people who participated, all the parents and grandparents who had young ones there, I know you were proud. The Saturday night youth and young adult bash, evening of dance and worship, it was terrific. Thanks to Vanessa, to Eric, the worship team, for a great evening. Special thanks to the young people from Gainesville and Kol Simcha Messianic Congregation who came here and just immersed our congregation in dance and joined together in worship. It was a wonderful time. And here's some numbers that may interest you. Last Friday night, 270 people were jammed into this room. 270. We have people who count. On Saturday, 100 people were here. Generally different. A few duplications. I was at both services. At the Russian service in the afternoon, there were 32. And at the Saturday night bash, Vanessa, are you here? There you are. How many from Jacksonville did we count? 13 to 30. We're not counting all the geezers like me. 27 13 to 30-year-olds were here from Jacksonville, and a little bit more than that from Gainesville. So we had probably about 57 13 to 30-year-olds here dancing in the other room and then worshiping in here. It was an awesome time. So when you add all that up together with the helpers on Saturday, Come here. When you add that all up together, about 482 people here for the weekend. A few like me were counted more than one, so it wasn't 482 different people, but it was hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of different people. And it was just a remarkable time, and it was a result of good leadership from so many different ones of you. Congratulations to all of you who led and to all of you who served. When we were praying before the service, I said to Kayla, do you feel like the Lord wants you to share a testimony tonight? And she said, no. And I said, well, if you do, you can. You can.
You'll all have to bear with me because I don't usually use the mic unless I'm singing, so. Saturday night was really awesome. The presence of the Lord was definitely here. It was really strong that night, and it was stronger than I've ever felt it before. The Lord came in, and he laid his hand on me and rocked me back and forth. And he sprinkled something over me that night that changed my life. So it was totally awesome. So I want to thank everyone once again for everyone that participated in it and helped out with it.
I don't think she has mic fright. Thank you also for all of you who tolerated the disinvite for Saturday night. I know everybody would have wanted to be there, and we will do some like free worship evenings and free dance evenings, but the purpose was for the youth to lead and for the youth to minister and for the youth to be ministered to. And that's exactly what happened. The dance leadership was by the youth, and it was fantastic. And the worship leadership and all the ministry was by the youth. And those few of us fossils, living fossils who were here, just sat back and watched and enjoyed how God was using the young people. Part of our role, old folks, part of our role is simply to tell the young people they can do it and let them do it. You hear what I'm saying? It's not to make them do it. It's not to tell them always how to do it. Sometimes they just need the opportunity. And I think that's a major part of why we're here, is to make sure that the young people get that opportunity and take that opportunity. So we're going to keep doing this. We're going to find new and newer ways to do different things. And all of you who enjoy the process of moving forward, you're going to have a blast. I can guarantee it. Well, as we move forward as a congregation, I want to bring a series of messages that's tied to the readings that we're doing for the weekly Torah portion and sometimes Haftorah portion, because I want to aim these to help us grow individually and as a congregational family. And last Saturday morning, I spoke about complaining. And I recommend that you order a CD and that you listen to that message and then memorize the whole thing. No, just take it to heart. Just take it to heart. And I had experience this week with some complaining that turned into something good. I'll tell you what happened. It was really quite funny. I had to take my car in for service, and one of my tires looked terrible. Poor tire. And I didn't have that many miles on it, less than 10,000. And I took it in, and it was making so much noise, sometimes I was afraid to drive the car. And I thought it was defective, you know, maybe it was like delaminating. And so I took it in, and there was a service technician who was told to ride with me, and he rode, and he said, "Man, you got a problem." I was glad he agreed. So we get out, we look at the tire, and he looks at me and he says, "These are the wrong tires." And it's not that he was talking down to me, but he was really letting me know I had a problem. All my tires were bad. I said to him, "Well, I think the other front tire looks pretty good." And he said, "No." And he showed me things I hadn't seen. And I said, "Well, what about the back tires? They look pretty good." He said, "Yeah, but they'll wear out when you rotate them." He said, "These tires are wrong." And I said, "Are you telling me these are the wrong tires for this car?" And he was looking at me, you know, sort of like I was an idiot. I said, "Well, why are they wrong?" And he said, "They're too aggressive." Now, I didn't even know tires could be aggressive until that moment. And I said, "What do you mean?" And he said, "Well, the rubber's really soft. You know, that's for good traction." And then he said, "You see the chunks in the tread pattern?" I hadn't really noticed all this stuff too carefully. You know, I haven't looked at tires for 8 years. And he said, "You got little chunks." I said, "You're right, I do." And he said, "Not only that, but the little chunks are broken into little pieces." And I'm thinking this is like to help the tire, you know, get a good grip on things. And I said, "You mean I've got the wrong tires on my car?" And he said, "Absolutely." I said, "You sure this is the problem?" He said, "Absolutely." And I said, "Man, because I bought this car from you guys and you put those tires on." And at that moment, I wasn't really worried. And then I went to the service guy, you know, who writes up everything and is responsible, not the technician. And I said, "This guy says I got the wrong tires because they're too aggressive and they shouldn't have been put on this car in the first place. Isn't that right?" And he went like, "And you all put those tires on the car before you sold it to me, before I even looked at it. So what do you think?" And he said, "I'm sure those are not the wrong tires." And I thought, I am going to have a problem. You know, how many of you have a lot of confidence in politicians? How many of you have a lot of confidence in car dealers? You know, no insult meant, but sometimes you just don't know who to trust and whose word to rely on. So this guy says, "I am sure they're the right size," which wasn't really the issue. Well, I started getting a little nervous, because I didn't really know how much tires cost, but I was figuring they'd be expensive. And I came home, and at this point, I've had like 40 minutes to mull over how bad this could be and how expensive it could be. And I come in and I tell Sandy, "Well, Sandy, they say the tires are wrong, and the one guy admits it, and the other guy, you know, it feels like they're trying to weasel out of this." You remember, I think I was sort of hanging my head a bit, talking sort of mopey. You know how you can get mopey and nothing's really happened, but you're anticipating something bad's going to happen, so you want to prepare for it with a good mopey attitude. So I had that. So I'm sort of anticipating something not working out so good. And I tell Sandy, and all of a sudden, I'm just imagining the other things that can go wrong. The brakes had a problem. The service technician said, "No, it's only the tires. What you think is the noise of the brakes isn't." And I'm feeling he's wrong, that they're going to find out the brakes are wrong. And all of a sudden I'm thinking, you know, this could be like untold amounts of money, terrible amounts of money. And a funny thing had happened a few days earlier, this past weekend. I'd been out of town, and while I was out of town, I hadn't paid my tithe. So I was like calculating what I owed, and I thought I did everything right. And I put one check in, and then I thought on Saturday, no, there's another check. And I had like this battle inside. Have you ever had a battle? You know, about giving money? I did. And I was thinking, I might need this money for the tires. Have you ever thought like that? Yeah. So I'm thinking like that. And I'm thinking, I might need the money. And I felt the Holy Spirit said, you give it. You're the rabbi. And yeah. So like he wasn't cutting me any slack. And so I put it in, and then I started getting nervous. You know, like the bill's going to come, and I think I'm going to be short. Well, they call me up in the afternoon, and they say, I'll tell you what, those tires all have to be replaced. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But in the morning, I did something. When I was moping, remember I told you I went home and I started moping? More than sort of. It was unabashed. You know, things are not going to work out. And I said this to Sandy, and it was like I was infectious. I wanted her to feel the agony too. Maybe some of you know what I'm talking about. You know, we're supposed to share our joy so that it can increase, and we're supposed to share our agonies so that they will decrease. Well, I just was ready to spread it, I think. So at some moment, I realized what I was doing, and I said, Sandy, let's pray. Do you remember this? We're standing in the kitchen, and I just prayed this very simple prayer. Lord, help them do the right thing for us. Help them just do the right thing. And it takes great faith to pray that way for car people. So I prayed that way. And in the afternoon, the guy calls up and he says, all the tires have to be replaced. And it's our fault. And we're going to do it. No charge to you. So I'm feeling pretty good. And I'm calculating now, you know, that money that I gave in the tithe to catch up. Well, this is much more than that I just saved. So I'm feeling like kind of happy with the Lord. Well, the next day the guy calls up again and he says, I got a little bit of bad news and some good news. And he said, we changed the tires. We covered that. We changed them completely. We aligned your car and we found out the brakes in the rear are bad and have to be redone. So I'm hearing that, and he says, so we'll need your car until tomorrow, but it's our fault, and we're going to replace them at our cost, no cost to you. So the bad news is we'll need it one more day. I just felt really good. Well, then I had this funny feeling, and yesterday I was like figuring stuff out about my tithe, and I went to Eric and I said, Eric, I just can't get all this worked out. So Eric like checks on my records and things, and he says, you've overpaid. And so, you know, at that moment I was thinking, well, Lord, why did you do this to me? Why didn't you just say, keep the money in your pocket? And I have no idea. And I can't answer that. I just felt great about it anyway. So I paid my tithe ahead. I got my tires for free. I got my brakes for free. And I just feel like it's good to bless the Lord. And as I've shared this story with a few other people, they've told me that God has really been blessing them too as they're tithing. So I just want to tell you this, not because I want to talk to you about tithing. This is not really what this is about. This is about complaining. You see, a complaint was rising up in me. And it just about derailed my emotions and my thoughts. And then I remembered something. I remembered what I'd been preaching about last Saturday, which is it's not good to complain in a way that brings harm to other people. It's not good to complain in a way that God despises, but it's good to bring our complaints to the Lord. And when Moses did that, when the children of Israel wanted meat, you know, it's like Atkins diet. Give us meat. Moses just said, I can't take it. I don't have meat for everybody. And why should all this pressure be on me? But he did not keep that complaint inside, and he didn't spread it around to other people. You know what Moses did? He went to God with a complaint. And he was very sincere and said things that some of you would never say to God. You would think it, but you'd never say it. He said, God, it wasn't my idea to do this, it was yours. I didn't conceive these people, you did. And why would you give me such a hard thing to do? It's going to kill me. And then he said, if you really like me, go ahead and kill me now. Very few people are that honest. It's not that they don't feel that way. It's not that they don't think it. They just don't tell God that. They mull it over and let it stir in them and make all sorts of trouble in them. But I can tell you something. Moses is a good example of how to walk with God. Because Moses shows us that when you've got a problem, you go to the Lord with the problem. It doesn't matter how big it is. It doesn't matter how overwhelming it is. You go to the Lord with the problem and he will help you. And what gets a lot of us in trouble is we go to everybody but the Lord. And we tell them everything we're upset with. And I want to help you. I want to encourage you to go to the Lord. That's why I told the story about my tires. Not because my tires are important to any of you. They're not. And for some of you, they're not even interesting. But many of you have similar situations where you've got problems. You've got your problems, and you've been not knowing what to do with them, and you've been taking your complaints to other people, or you've been bottling it up inside of you, and it can explode. So in the message last week, I was speaking about how complaining can be normal and acceptable. It can just be good old-fashioned kvetching. But there's some complaining that God despises, and we should really understand what that is and try to avoid it. And there's some complaining that brings harm to other people, and we really should understand what that is and avoid it too. And I'm not talking about, when I'm talking about not complaining, I'm not talking about ignoring problems that need to be solved. I'm not talking about avoiding conflict. I'm not talking about hiding your head in the sand or like closing your eyes or like, you know, just escaping from the reality. Yeshua is the way. He's the truth. He's the life. And he uses the truth for good. And so you can face reality. You can have eyes, heart, mind, and spirit of faith. And you can look at situations as they actually are. And you can objectively describe them. Sometimes I ask people, how are they? And they say, well, by faith I'm healed. And I know they're not doing well. Because what that means is they're sick. What that means is they still have a problem. What that means is they're hoping to get out of a problem. They've learned to use different kinds of religious jargon to communicate. I'd much rather that people say, I'm sick and I'm hoping God will help me. And I'm trusting in the Lord and looking to him. I try to be as honest as I can with you guys for a reason. I try to tell you what I go through, not because I'm an exhibitionist with my problems, but because I want you to understand something, that in the Bible there's a pattern for this. There's a pattern of reality, of describing realities, good, bad, and ugly, and then learning how to deal with those realities in a healthy way and in the way of faith. And you can be saying to yourself, you know, I'm going to believe, I'm going to believe, I'm going to believe, I don't believe. I don't understand. And some of these things can be better handled by being simple and direct with the Lord. And coming to him as the psalmist did, as David did, and saying, you can read in these psalms sometimes, David starts out and says, God, many are the enemies who've rallied against me. Many are the people who are trying to destroy me. And he comes to the Lord and he just says, ah! And he processes these things before the Lord, and then something starts to change. And then he starts saying, I'm going to bless God. And the enemies are going to be defeated. Mighty is the Lord. And he's not trying to drum up enthusiasm for something. He's just showing us a process. Then when you honestly come to the Lord and process things with him, things will change. When you bottle it up inside with all the religious facades that the people can put on, it doesn't do you any good, and it doesn't do the people around you any good, and the Lord knows better. You can't fool him. Well, a lot of details that I covered Saturday that I will not cover today, but when you think about what makes the Lord angry about complaining, you'll find some interesting things. And this passage in Numbers 11 really speaks about it. But I asked the people Saturday what thoughts they had about why God gets angry with certain kinds of complaining. And we identified some things like lack of thankfulness. You know, a complaint that has no thankfulness in the person can really kick him off. Another one is the way that certain complaints just spread. Rather than being oriented towards a solution, some people are only happy when others pick up their complaint. And the Lord actually despises that. And we talked about something else that the children of Israel manifest. You remember when they were complaining about not having meat? They said, oh man, the food in Egypt was so good. We had fish, we had melons, we had garlic, onions, and leeks. You know, only an Italian and a Jew could talk like that. Just to eat that stuff. And they said, now we're eating manna and we are like turning into nothing. So there's a thing that can really make the Lord angry. It's when you idealize the past, you make it better than it was, you remember only the good parts and you forget the bad and you use it as a way of complaining. And you lose your sense of balance. And then I think the final thing is the lack of prayer, the fact that the people would complain but they wouldn't talk to the Lord about it. They instead would tell everybody else their complaint. They wanted everybody to feel it, but none of them went to God with it. They did go to Moses, but not to the Lord. Moses was the only one who went to God with his complaint. And so if we can see that, we can, I think, make some changes for ourselves. And when we see how Moses reacted, the main thing, I think, that we can see is that in the middle of his own despair, in the middle of his own self-pity, in the middle of his own feeling overwhelmed and wanting to quit, wanting to die and regretting the assignment God had given him, what did he do? He went to the Lord and he brought God his trouble. I want to tell you this. When you have troubles, bring them to the Lord. It doesn't mean you don't talk about them to anybody. I'm not talking about that. It doesn't mean you keep everything to yourself. I'm not talking about that. I'm saying that if you want to walk in the Spirit and you have needs, communicate to the Lord those needs. If you have anxieties, communicate those. If you have unsolvable difficulties, communicate those to the Lord. And He will really help you. He will make a big difference for you. Much more could be said about this. I won't say it right now because I want to turn to the second story, which was from last week. It's the story of the spies. How many of you have ever heard of the 12 spies of Israel? Not so many. Now, raise your hands up if you have. Okay, I just need to say. I would say about half. Okay, how many of you know that the Jewish people once were in Egypt? Okay, good. And you know that they came out of Egypt at Passover time. Okay, you with me? The common knowledge for a lot of people. And they wandered in the desert for quite some time. And then it was about time to look into entering the land of Israel, the promised land, and Moses sent 12 spies, one for each of the tribes of Israel, to be an advance team, to be scouts, and to go into the land, and they had an assignment. They were told, find out what the fruit is like there, and what the agriculture is like. Look at the cities, look at the people, and come back and tell us what you see. He gave some detailed assignments, and the leaders who were sent out, there were the 12 of them, one from each tribe, they were real leaders. They were trusted guys, men of stature. And they went out, and they looked, and interestingly enough, they all pretty much saw the same thing. You know what they saw? They came back carrying, like on a pole, this immense cluster of grapes. It was so large, it was remarkable. It was so unbelievable, they didn't think anybody else would believe their stories. And so they brought back one cluster that was so giant, everybody looked at it and were amazed. They brought back pomegranates and figs too. And they said, this is a land flowing with milk and honey. And you know what that means. It means it's great for cattle, it's great for sheep, it's great for goats. That's where you get milk from, all those things. And honey means it's great for cultivation because you can cultivate with bees and get the honey from them. And it's an important sweetener. They didn't have high fructose corn syrup during those days. And so they all agree that the fruit is amazing. The agriculture, the cultivation is incredible. And then they all agree on some other details. They said, the cities are big and they're fortified and there are lots of people there. And then they said this, and some of the people are really big. And then they named these names, you know, they're Anakim there. And they go, Anakim, these are giants. And they start naming the kinds of people like Goliath. Immense people, warriors, literally giants, fierce giants. And the moment they say that, you know what rises up in the people? Let's go back to Egypt. There's a song, let's go back to Zion, let's go back to Zion. It's an old song, you probably don't know it. That's not what they said. They said, let's go back to Egypt. And they start saying, man, we had it good in Egypt. Why should we come this far just to die? They start complaining, and their complaint just spreads everywhere. And you know what? They had an all-night kvetch. It says in Numbers 14, listen to this, the congregation, the kehillah, the kahal of Israel, lifted up their voices and they cried and they wept that whole night and they complained to Moses and Aaron and they said, if only we had died in the land of Egypt, or if only we had died here in the wilderness. So that's what rose up in them. Wish we were dead. And they even had a meeting where they selected some leaders, some new leaders, instead of Moses. Leaders who would take them back to Egypt. You know what happened? They forgot they were slaves in Egypt. They began to imagine life was better for them in the past than it was in the present. And then they said something that really got the Lord upset. They said, if we try to take that land, we're going into a place where we are like grasshoppers in our own eyes. When we compare ourselves to them, we feel like grasshoppers. And when they look at us, all they see are grasshoppers. And if we try to do this, our wives and our children will be taken from us or killed. And they begin to base everything on this. They move away from this idea, oh, it's going to be bad, we wish we could die, to if we try to do this, our beloved wives and our dear children will die. And they act like this is, you know, their honorable, protective courage. We must do what's right for our kids. Well, some of you who know the story intimately know what happens. Two of these 12, Joshua and Caleb, have a different understanding of what could happen. They all have the same set of facts, but two had one interpretation. Two said, if we walk with God, we can get in. And it'll become a pleasant land, and it's been given to us, and they will not be powerful against us, these giants and all these who dwell there. And the other 10 say, we're all gonna die. And so it's not a question of the facts, it's a question of the interpretation of the facts. It's the reaction. It's their perspective on the facts that got them in trouble. It was not that they disagreed on the facts. Do you hear me? There's a certain kind of complaining that is not really about facts. It's about the steps afterwards. You see something, it's not that you see it differently than another person. It's that it means something different to you than it means to another person. And what happens is that the two guys, Joshua and Caleb, are right, and the other 10 turned out to be wrong. And this had profound effects on that whole desert generation. God looked for those who would not be unfaithful to trust Him regarding difficult situations, who would not just complain, but who would seek to find courage in the Lord and to look for the best. And those two, Joshua and Caleb, actually went into the promised land along with all the young people. The young people. Do you hear me? The children are here. You can sit with your parents or grandparents, those who brought you. I want you adults to hear this very carefully, and teenagers, listen very carefully, and everybody between the ages of 13 and 30, listen to this very carefully, especially those who are younger than 13 and over than 32. Okay, everybody, listen carefully to what I'm saying. The older generation of leaders, of spies, of trusted men of stature, looked at what God had prepared for the children of Israel, and they couldn't see it from God's perspective. Yes, they saw the facts, but they did not have the right interpretation of those facts. They didn't have the right analysis. They didn't have the right perspective on those facts, and it led them to believe that the young people would be harmed if they tried to follow the Lord by going into the land. And they were wrong. And instead, they brought harm on themselves, and God brought the young people in without them. I want you to see something here. In every generation, there is a moment when God is getting a hold of young people, and the older ones don't recognize it adequately and are trying to be protective when really the eyes of faith are not operating in them. This congregation has tremendous potential if we join ourselves with the Joshuas and the Calebs rather than with the 10 spies. And how do we protect ourselves? How do we make ourselves strong? It is simply by not submitting to negative interpretations, to negative analysis, to the kind of complaining that's not of the Spirit. There is a good kind of complaining that will arouse the Spirit of God. When I am discontent with me and I want to grow rather than stay where I am, my complaint about me is good. When Moses was complaining to the Lord about the children of Israel wanting meat, something clicked in him and he said, oh God, just kill me now. I'm sick of my wretchedness. He saw what was going on. He had a problem. And the Lord responded to that moment of sincerity and openness and said, Moses, I will give you 70 men who can walk with you. Moses thought it was all on his shoulders. The Lord brought 70 men to him. And the Lord said, I'm going to put on them the same spirit I put in you, the same Holy Spirit and the same attitude of seeking me in times of trouble. and you will do it together. And they began to do it together. But they weren't always powerful enough. They needed the youth as well. Do you hear what I'm saying? Let me tell you something. You can't go forward into your future without the help of those younger than you. Can't be done. Let me say it another way. You can go into the future with the help of those younger than you. When you know it, and when you're willing to join your hearts together with the young folk, everything becomes possible again for you. It really does. So I want to encourage those of you who have a heart for the younger generation, keep at it. Don't give up. They will make mistakes. So will you. So will I. And those mistakes are not lethal. Our job is not to expect perfection. Our job is not to expect people, young people, to not do what we did. Some of the angriest adults are those that are angry with young people who are doing the same things they did when they were younger. And the angriest are those who see young people not doing as bad as they did, but think they could do worse. And I tell you what, when you stop being angry with young people, thinking, oh man, they're going to be worse than me, and you start looking at yourself and saying, they could be better than me. They could exceed me. They could go beyond me. And you start looking at them with those eyes and you start investing in them. You know what? You'll go further too. You'll go further and they'll go further too. So here we are. We're at a time as a congregation where we're seeing something, and last weekend was evidence of this. When we put our hearts into the children, into the youth, into the young adults, and we allow them to serve, and we put our efforts into raising them up and quickly letting them do it. I mean, how many of you thought in 2 weeks kids could prepare a musical? How many of you think you could prepare kids, 31 kids, in 2 weeks? How many of you think you can survive having 31 kids with you for 5 hours at a time, or 4 hours even? How many of you think you could do it for 10 days out of 2 weeks? How many of you would just say, God, just kill me now? Some of you think you can do it because you did it. Right, Stephanie? Right? Right, Brian? Right, Deanne? Right, Paula? Carla, some of you others who were here, you could do it, and you did it. How many of you thought that the young people just want to come out and worship God? You know, some of you feel like the only way to get your young people to do anything is to push them or kick them, or to threaten them, or to, like, promise them, you know, pay them off, bribe them, whatever it takes. I tell you something, there's something that's risen up in the young people that wants to serve God. We have to help them. We have to be honest with them. We have to be straight with them. We have to be good examples. We have to respect them and not condescend towards them. They have much to offer, and they can help us, and we can learn from them. And I thoroughly enjoyed being in this room Saturday night until, when was it? 1:30? Yeah, I got home really late. I really enjoyed just sitting there and watching the young people worship the Lord and lead. And you know what I did? I just worshiped too. I just joined in. I really didn't do anything. At the end, they invited me and Rabbi Arroyo up here, and I thought, well, they're going to have us, have us guys pray for them. And they said, would you come up? We want to pray for you. I thought, well, praise God. And they prayed, in fantastic ways, for which I'm grateful. I'm telling you all this because you wouldn't see it all. Because, of course, we had rules as to who could come. And I just got in, I don't know, by the grace of God, they let me in. I wanted to be here, and I was glad to be here. But my most important job was not getting in the way and making sure the young people did what the young people could do. That was my job. Tonight, we take the cup and the bread of Messiah. And I decided that we can start calling this Seudat HaMashiach. Seudat, that means the meal or the dinner or the supper. HaMashiach, of Messiah. And Seudat HaMashiach is a Hasidic term that describes a final Seder that takes place at the end of Passover, during which the Jewish people anticipate the coming of Messiah and they dedicate the whole Pesach to Messiah's coming. It's something not many know about. I didn't learn much about it until this year, in fact. But I realized if our people can gather together at the end of Pesach and celebrate and anticipate with a meal for Messiah, we sure can too. Seudat HaMashiach. So if you've been wondering what to call this thing, I got it. Seudat HaMashiach. Seudat HaMashiach. The supper of Messiah. The dinner of Messiah. It's Messiah's Seder, in a sense. So that's what we're celebrating here. And all of you who have been here in the past know something, that this is open for anyone who has put their trust in Messiah and who knows that Yeshua is the Son of God, He's Messiah, He is Adonai, He's raised from the dead, He's borne our sins, and we've turned our hearts to Him and we're trusting Him with all of our heart, soul, and strength. It doesn't matter what congregation you go to, what your background is, or if you're a member of this congregation or somewhere else. If you've put your trust in the Lord, you have a right to participate in His new covenant, in His new covenant celebration. Now I want to ask Vanessa to come forward, and some people who will be helping us tonight. Brian and Deanne are going to be helping serve tonight, and then Elliot, can you and Missy? Can you help? Thank you. Vanessa?